Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot. Hey listeners, my name is Brianna Contreras and I'm editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. In this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, I spoke with Ted Quinn, CEO and founder of Activate Care. During our conversation, we touched on where the need to address social determinants of health is today, as we're still in the COVID-19 public health emergency. And we also discussed how analyzing data and tools like artificial intelligence can address these issues.
Hello, Ted. How are you today?
How are you, Brianna? Good to meet you.
Good. Thank you. Nice to meet you as well. So to get started, if you can just tell our listeners about your role and about Activate Care.
Super. So Ted Quinn, I'm one of the founders of Activate Care. We're an organization that's been around for about 10 years with a focus on trying to think more broadly about whole person care. As you may or may not be aware, many communities and states are working to think differently about approaches to care for a range of issues, not only kind of their clinical care, but also for community care and the social needs that often drive so many of the issues that people experience in their lives. So at the end of the day, we're trying to help tackle some of those big challenges around the outcomes we all want to see, better health, quality health for individuals, particularly underserved communities. We talk a lot about health equity in the context of how do we drive meaningful and appropriate care. Often that means helping people that don't access care and get care, and also helping those that really they often come referred to as super utilizers or high utilizers. How do we help enable them to get more appropriate care also? But at the end of the day, it's all about being sure that people have that access and also that we can see the economics and the health that we want to see for those populations. So as an organization, we're focused on making that happen and pretty excited about the ability to have impact.
Awesome. Thank you. And because, you know, you say you guys really focus on social care, my next question, I'd like for you, if you can just briefly just touch on where the need to address social determinants of health stands today, as we are still into the COVID-19 public health emergency, and which has thankfully been recently extended to April of next year. So if you can maybe just touch on that a bit.
You bet. You know, it's interesting. I talk with organizations and people, I'll often say that, you know, we're all fortunate. We're blessed to live in a time where we have a lot of both reactive and preventative clinical care available to us, right? If I have some major event, a terrible diagnosis, I can go and get medical care and be treated in ways that have never been accessible in the history of the world. Likewise, there are a lot of things we've learned about people's genetics and their testing to say, hey, this might be an issue for you in the long term. So what can we do in terms of exercise or diet or medications to help you avoid an event in the future? One of the things that we've seen through the course of COVID-19 is that healthcare, broadly defined, provider organizations and payers have invested a lot of money in reactive social care. And if COVID did anything, it showed us the scope and scale of the challenge, right? When people lost their jobs or companies were shutting down for a period of time, it just kind of really escalated the needs, right? In terms of housing security, food insecurity, isolation, depression, things that I think we're going to start to see a bigger wave just coming out of this even now. And so one of the things that we talk a lot about is how do you think about the preventative social care? How do you identify and work with individuals before, if you will, their lives go sideways? So if that were to happen with them, you're in a position such that, or they're in a position that they know how to navigate care and have the confidence to engage with care. And so when we think a lot about kind of what we've been going through over the last couple of years, this needed kind of visibility into the need, the reaction to the need has really been appropriate and fitting. And I think the other side of that now is, what are we going to do so that we kind of, if you will, affect the demand side so that we can help people by moving further upstream to help them avoid these issues in the future? Or if they do face these issues, how do we help them get to the appropriate services? Often what people will do is they'll show up just to an emergency department because they're cold, they're homeless, they don't have food, and they don't have a medication that they need. And so how do we help these individuals navigate healthcare, broadly defined, both from a clinical perspective, but also a social perspective, to access the appropriate care? So I think that's a needed effort, right? We've made a lot of investments in supply side, and that's really important. And it's really been shown by the over the course of the pandemic. And now we need to say, how do we continue to reinforce that on the demand side and help individuals that are often kind of okay right now? Right? They might be rising risk, they might be in a good place, but when things go sideways in their lives, how do we help them navigate themselves, right? And have that self-resiliency, that health confidence to be sure they know what they can access. This is not about denying any type of care. It's really appropriate care. And once again, in the spirit of health equity.
Got it. Thank you. So what are some key drivers or ways to be addressing health disparities at the moment? Or I know an article that was sent over to me by Aaron, you addressed business models. So if you'd like to touch into that or wherever else.
Yeah, you know, we often talk about healthcare, and for right or for wrong, healthcare is a business. Social care is a business. And that's not a criticism. We just have to acknowledge the reality. And the reality is that when these organizations are stood up, they're all stood up with a specific mission or a specific value proposition. I'm looking to deliver this type of care. I'm looking to meet this specific need for this specific community, right? It's very common to kind of have this baseline. And then against that, organizations lay out kind of what are the resources I need to make that happen in terms of professionals and dollars, but also what are the processes? Where am I going to go to access and have the tools, the supplies, the food, the housing, whatever it might be, to support that? So the value proposition, the resources, and the processes to support that business model. Of course, that at the end of the day, it has to be sustainable. So the economics around that, see, in business will sometimes refer to as it needs to have a profit margin. What do we mean by that? Is it needs to be sustainable, right? It gives a return in a way for people to make enough money to support their programs, their missions, and their value proposition. So when you're put in a position where you add another capability or another requirement, you always have to look at it in the context of that organization's business model. Because the reality is the mission they have, the resources they put in place, perhaps most importantly, the core processes of how we operate are now being questioned. And so basically they're saying we're trying to introduce something new to something that works. And anytime you do that, there's a natural tendency to say, how's that going to affect my resourcing? How's that going to affect my processes and actually how I deliver my value proposition? Is it something that's sustainable that we can support? And so the reality is as you do introduce these new models and as you expand these needs and appreciate how care is delivered, you've got to be sure you understand that business model and look for opportunities to introduce these value-add services and benefits in a way that's meaningful. And so what we typically see is organizations will carve off a team and say, okay, I'm going to test this quickly with a team against a specific population to learn quickly and cycle through a slightly different value proposition with a different set of resources and a different set of processes and priorities to work to make it sustainable. So in our experience, that's kind of the approach. You have to be thinking about that quote unquote business model, but recognize in order to do it, it often requires testing. It often requires different resources. Sometimes it needs a different mechanism for funding to support it and get it off the ground as you try to push it through scale.
Right. Thank you. And I realize I probably should have asked this next question prior to, but I kind of want to touch back onto the public health emergency. As of today, how crucial is it to continue following the steps or follow, you know, these models, as you mentioned, how crucial is it to, you know, transition to these models once the public health emergency is lifted, whenever that may be? So I guess what will happen to a lot of these people experiencing, a lot of the health inequities?
Well, you know, that's a great question. We're living these last few years through this public health emergency, where the rising demand and needs for individuals that have experienced COVID, organizations and communities that have significant shutdowns, have had to kind of practice their business differently or kind of engage with their community differently. That's been an interesting experiment where I think, as I alluded to earlier, is really where we've learned both the scope and the scale of the need. And the reality is that we may not have another pandemic, you know, knock on wood that we don't, and that things continue to improve, but you don't have to pick up one paper or go to one website and see the other kind of clouds on the horizon, right? The concern about recession, the concern about employment stability, the concern about rising concerns around depression and anxiety with families, with kids, with adults. So while the pandemic might wind down, the reality is there's a lot of complexities in the world and in our country that are tied to things that are completely independent of the pandemic. And so the pandemic shone a light on it. And now that I think that healthcare recognizes and is acknowledging and more evidence is building around the implications of these community care needs, these social drivers of health, there's only kind of going to be more momentum to say, how do we address them in a meaningful way? That kind of comes into play in a market where, you know, you have payers and delivery systems which sit at the center of our healthcare system, and that's not going to change, or certainly change anytime soon. And so the fun experiments and the work that we're seeing expand across the country really tie to these new models of care, and different states are doing things differently around things like ACOs and ACHs and CCOs and whole person care, now CalAIM in California. All of these communities are thinking differently about how do I look at TED, if I was one of those individuals, more holistically, recognizing the implication of these issues on his overall wellness and overall spend against our resources.
Got it. Thank you. So it was shared that the Activate looks at, you know, analyzing data and using artificial intelligence as kind of addressing a lot of these issues towards social inequities. So can you address, you know, maybe with the use of AI or analyzing data, or even the importance of collaborating with community health coordinators, how that can address a lot of these issues?
That's a great question. The reality is that data is the currency or the language of healthcare. All of the evidence base and all the technology we have accessible to us today in clinical care is based on a significant repository of data, right? I often think of kind of clinicians as scientists, and they're using as much data as they have available to make the best recommendations around what's an appropriate level of care for a specific treatment. If I have cancer, if I have heart-related issues, if I'm diabetic, whatever it might be. We need the same level of discipline on the community care side. And the challenge is that often this work is fairly uncoordinated. It's not a community that's not traditionally been rooted in that type of mentality and mission. And once again, that's not a criticism. It's just a recognition that the complexities of social care aren't at the same level of, and the data around that is not at the same level of data we have on the clinical side. And so a lot of the work that you see in organizations that are trying to tackle these set of challenges and issues is to say, how can we enrich our data set to a point such that we have better informed care about how best to support an individual experiencing these kind of social care needs? So bringing that discipline on the social side that we've seen on the clinical side for decades is so critical. And so a lot of the investments that you see organizations making is to say, how do we capture that data? How do we best understand both the supply, the ability to meet specific needs in specific communities? And as you can appreciate, that can be very different from different communities and major metropolitan areas versus urban areas versus rural areas. And really understanding where we can move the needle and have impact on individuals. But understanding that kind of demand supply side, but at the same time, having better visibility to understand the complexities of individual families or individuals who are going through those issues. So a lot of what you see is the effort to really capture that data, data sits at the center, and bringing that rigor is really where we're trying to get with social care.
So where does artificial intelligence come into play?
So what you're basically doing is you're trying to develop those personas of individuals. So what you're doing is you're taking all the sets of data that you can find, right? So we try to access every kind of public data source to understand, you know, at the zip code level, you know, insurance rates, car ownership, cycles through access to transportation, all those issues. And you're trying to use that technology to try to build a persona, right? What are the people in a specific community who we can profile and develop that persona? And therefore, if we understand that, and if we can engage Ted, if I was in that population, I now know where I can impact and what I can do or not do. If I'm in a community where there is no housing and I have a significant housing shortage or individuals looking for housing, there's very little I'm going to be able to do in the near term to try to affect that. But other issues like isolation and behavioral issues or food security or other types of transportation, there are things we can do there. So we by AI, we can understand both what are those personas and where are the issues that we can impact for that individual to try to drive a better outcome and engaging against their goals. At the end of the day, I think you would agree that if we're not targeting issues or concerns or worries that an individual has, we're probably not going to likely move the needle, right? If they're not engaged and looking to make a change, if this is not something they're concerned about or is kind of on their short list of concerns, then we're not going to make a difference. The poster child for this is a diabetic who gets a prescription for a specific medication, but will always choose to feed themselves or their family before purchasing medication or their insulin. So you've got to understand those priorities and those dynamics. And when you do, it helps you assemble a plan and the priorities to help those individuals get those needs addressed.
Got it. Thank you. And lastly, so I guess, can you explain the importance of, you know, collaborating with community health coordinators on this issue?
Great question. One of the things that we've seen is that in order to have successful programs, the bedrock is trust. And being able to look across a table or sit in a room with another person or on a phone and know that the person that you're talking to understands your specific situation, life story, and relates to you. And so what we're seeing with successful programs is they recognize the power of these local community health professionals. And so putting them on the ground and having them come from the community and within trusted organizations to engage with these individuals makes a substantial difference versus somebody who's in a remote part of the country or a part of the world who you're trying to engage with. I think we've all had the experience where you call into for a specific service, either for financial services and support banking or for transportation, and you know you're talking to somebody on the other side of the country or the other side of the world who has a fairly limited and a fairly targeted ability to help you do a specific job. Imagine trying to do that with somebody who lives in, you know, Southie here in Boston, and they're trying to describe their specific situation and how difficult it would be to build trust with that person versus if it was somebody who lived in Boston, where I live, relating to and understanding the specific challenges and being able to talk to a specific food bank or community group that they know or that they've worked with. It's all about that trust. And so it's hard to get away from these models where you have those types of professionals that can engage, relate with, and as I mentioned at the center, have that foundational trust to help people make changes in their lives or get the needs and services met.
Wonderful, thank you. And Ted, that's all I had for you, but if there's anything that you'd like to share with our listeners that maybe I didn't address.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that the reality is that there are so many initiatives underway around the country, right? If you were to Google, community-based services or the social determinants of health, it's just a field that there's just so much activity underway right now. And as you think about that activity, you just see this thousands upon thousands of programs. And it's exciting to see that the investments are being made both at the public and private level locally, but also at the federal and state level of people recognizing and trying to push these programs. And so being able to ensure that you're very focused so often with the folks you're trying to serve is critical for success. It's very common that when you're engaging with individuals who are at risk, that there's a litany of challenges that they face, right? If you were working with somebody who was homeless, as you can appreciate, there are probably a number of social and clinical needs and challenges that they face. And so it's just recognizing the size of the scope and the ability to focus on where you can move the needle that's going to drive success for a program. Because once you've done that, then you can build from there. At the end of the day, those of us that are kind of working in this space, it's all about impact and being able to help people change and to be able to make a difference in the communities within which we live and work. So I take my hat off to all the people that show the passion and the interest to do this work. And recognizing the size of the lift and the challenge in front of us, but it's meaningful and important work.
Of course, it definitely is.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.